Welcome to Equipping the Core. We're excited to be back after our summer break and even more excited to have Tara Miner joining us today. Tara is the product manager for high capacity communications here at Marine Corps Systems Command. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can you give me an overview of your team and what systems you support?
Product manager for high capacity comms came about after the command modernization effort executed in February of 2024 when PM comm systems became PM tactical communications and electromagnetic warfare systems. Originally, it was two teams, the PDM for SATCOM, and that merged with PDM for terrestrial high capacity communications. We have three teams supporting us right now. They have programs in various stages of the acquisition lifestyle that provide capabilities to the Marines to enable operations through transmission of ground-based comms for command and control. So we've got, within those three teams, we've got wideband SATCOM. That includes our very small aperture terminal, VSAT, which many are probably familiar with. The MCWIS, the Marine Corps Wideband SATCOM family of systems, which includes MCWIS Expeditionary and MCWIS Light and Heavy, and then SCAR, which is our SATCOM Agile Reachback capability. The InterSATCOM team, the second team from PDM HCC InterSATCOM, that includes the Expeditionary Advanced Ground Link, also known as EAGLE, the Global Broadcast Service, and the Secure Mobile Anti-Jam Robot Reliable Tactical Terminal, or SMART-T. That one's a tongue twister.
That's a mouthful.
Yes, it is. And then last is our THC-2 team. That primarily includes the next generation troposcatter system, the line of sight radio system, and the tactical elevated antenna mast system, also known as TEAMS.
Lots of systems.
Yes, we've got a lot of systems.
Yeah. So you mentioned the NGT, and I know that just began fielding, and it's replacing a system that's been in use for a few decades. Can you tell us a bit about that system and what upgrades Marines can expect?
Sure, yeah, and I'm glad you noted the time since the Track 170, which is the legacy system, since that's been fielded, which was decades ago. So it's a really great opportunity. This is one case where we're actually removing a legacy system and replacing it with an improved capability. So we are very, very excited. So with time comes the technology allowing for greater bandwidth and a more expeditionary form factor. The reliance on higher data throughput to maintain the common operational picture in near real time was a requirement we were given to accomplish using this beyond line of sight capability using the troposphere. So that's what the NGT, the next generation troposcatter, is.
Okay.
So I think our team met that challenge exceptionally. NGT, it fits into a single JLTV, which is an improved upgrade from the Track 170. It also supports the X-band in addition to the traditional C-band, which is usually what troposcatter is based off of. So we've got an increase of bandwidth there.
Okay.
And then it also supports significantly higher range and data rates over the legacy solution.
For the NGT, your team recently completed fielding a net with Marine Corps Communications Electronics School at 29 Palms. How did that go? Was it the first net for the system?
Yes, we did just complete that fielding and net back on the 30th of August. That was about a month-long effort. It was not without challenges, and we did have some lessons learned to use for our future fieldings of that system. But overall, it went really well. The planning required to conduct that fielding and net can be a real challenge, but the coordination by the team and the Marines and the civilians at the comm school was almost flawless. We fielded 30 systems and conducted 3 weeks of new equipment training for the schoolhouse. The third week were for the maintainers of the system, who also attended the first 2 weeks.
Okay.
This is a major milestone in the Corps' efforts to replace the legacy Track 170 and improve the fleet's long-range terrestrial C2 command and control capabilities. The team is now busy working the delivery schedule with the vendor to plan out and support the next round of fieldings, which should start in first quarter of FY25.
And those will be fielded all through FY25?
Yes, it will. Okay. Our next focus for fielding will be 3MAF.
Okay. Another system that you mentioned and has my favorite acronym of them all, SCAR. What is SCAR and when can Marines expect to receive it?
So SCAR is the SATCOM Agile Reachback capability. It's not yet a program of record, but it is an effort. So
okay.
Essentially, it's SpaceX's Starshield platform, which is a more secure version of the Starlink commercial product.
Okay.
Yes, its main purpose is to provide the Marines the use of low Earth orbit satellites, allowing diversity and agility and gaining more bandwidth for use when needed. So we have the MCWIS, Marine Corps Wideband SATCOM family of systems, which provides more of that military SATCOM capability.
Okay.
And SCAR is intended to be that commercial capability to add increased throughput for the Marines.
Okay.
So the Marines globally have discovered the advantages of this capability, and several units have purchased some of their own. We're working closely with DCI, C4, and CD&I to get this capability to the fleet sometime in first quarter 25 to meet our initial operating capability.
So having a commercial off-the-shelf capability like this, does it add more bandwidth in the field? Like more, I don't know much about SATCOM, but like channels?
It does, and as SpaceX releases more satellites, there's the way SATCOM works. You've got multi layers of satellites. So you've got the LEO, which is the low Earth orbit. You've got the MEO, which is the medium Earth orbit. Then you've got the GEO, which is the geostationary Earth orbit.
Okay.
And geostationary is where the brunt of our capabilities work from. That's usually where the military capability is.
Okay.
We're doing more to get into that MEO capability. And then this LEO, that's where Starshield, you'll hear about Amazon Kuiper, Allspace. There are others coming into the market that are kind of flooding that LEO capability. And because it's lower Earth, the throughput tends to be faster.
Lower.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And
okay.
It tends to be a little bit less expensive. So the Marines know that, and it's small. You know, if you've ever seen a Starlink or Starshield terminal, you know, it's not much more than a shoebox. So it's something very easy to set up and use. It doesn't require a lot of transit cases. It doesn't require a lot of training. Now with SCAR phase one, which is what we're calling this SpaceX Starshield initiative, where we've procured our initial set of terminals to field in support of our IOC. That's SCAR phase one. SCAR phase two is planned for the 27 through 29 timeframe. That's what will be our true hybrid SATCOM terminal. It'll provide a multi-band, multi-orbit, that LEO, MEO, GEO capability in a single terminal. Right now, we don't have that.
That's interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
And with that, we're leveraging the Navy. It's called the Navy Sting program. They're doing a phased program. I think they're in their increment zero right now, working towards an increment one. And then they're working increment two, three, and four. And their increment three and four is supposed to be that multi-band, multi-orbit terminal. So our plan in the Marine Corps is to leverage all of the research and development efforts that they are doing, and then kind of take that product and Marine Corps-ize it to make it something that'll meet our needs.
Okay. It's really interesting when you have all the orbits, because then you can jump from each one depending on which satellite's available, I'm assuming.
Yes. And our plan and our premise in the program office is to, with the family of systems for SATCOM, and even with our THC-2, our terrestrial high-capacity comm system, the line-of-sight radio system, the Eagle, the next-generation troposcatter system, is to give the fleet options. If one capability is impacted, we have other options for them to use to have that critical communications capability.
You've lightly touched on it, but the Marine Corps Wideband Satellite Communications Light and Heavy, or MCWIS. Can you tell us a bit more about that program?
Sure. So presently, we sustain the very small aperture terminal, the VSAT family of systems. There's VSAT small, medium, large. That is a system that's been in sustainment for several years, and it's meeting the needs of the Marine Corps. However, we're running into a lot of obsolescence issues at this point. It's an old system. The parts are not being manufactured, and we're constantly having to find parts and find ways to harvest parts to maintain readiness of that solution. So our replacement system for that is the MCWIS Light Heavy. This will be our future system to meet that geostationary orbit satellite access. It's comprised of modular man-portable cases. It's multi-band. It operates on the X, the KU, and the KA band. It's geosynchronous, and it's also MEO, medium Earth orbit, capable to operate super high frequency satellite terminals. So that one, that is another case-based system. It'll also fit in the back of the JLTV.
Okay.
It's also, this is something that just came about back in July, it's also the first ground-based terminal certified to operate on SES's MPOWER MEO constellation. So for us, that's a big deal. We're trying to get into that MEO space. Right now, we don't have a capability that does that. This light-heavy terminal is certified to work on the MEO satellite constellation. The light-heavy, our contract was just awarded last September. So right now, that was awarded to Lightcom. So right now, we are in the DT developmental testing phase. We'll be moving into operational testing next summer. And we are on track to meet our IOC, our initial operational capability, in fourth quarter of FY26.
That's pretty fast.
Yes, yes. We're making really good progress. We have a good relationship with the vendor. Part of our team is out in Victor, New York this week at the vendor site doing a level of repair analysis and inventory of our test assets. They've got some Marines out there, so it's a good time for them to kind of see what this system will look like and start understanding what the organic maintenance plan for the system might be.
And to get their hands on the system in the beginning to kind of get an idea of what's coming.
Yes.
It's always a plus.
Yes, it is.
We always want the Marines' feedback.
Yes.
Marine feedback, how does that tie into your process, especially when it comes to SCAR or some of the other programs that you've mentioned?
Okay. Yes. No one loses the importance of Marine input and feedback with these systems. Our manpower, personnel, and training effort is substantial and critical to bringing users to product they need. During system development, we conduct several limited user evaluations to get Marines around these products early to gather their feedback on the product from ease of use to human factors input. We're actually planning multiple LUIs for both the McWiz Light Heavy effort and the Eagle program, the Expeditionary Advanced Groundlink program, in 25.
Okay.
We're working with Makatia on those efforts. We're working with 3MEF, 1MEF, to see what we can do to get user engagement early on those systems. Fleet input is also essential in planning our capability improvements in the form of engineering change proposals for our fielded systems. For example, the fleet identified a need for increased power for the McWiz expeditionary solution. We worked with CD&I to prioritize and fund this change and are currently working an effort to replace the transceiver to one that's more powerful and better meets the Marines' needs.
Okay.
And with SCAR, as you mentioned, we heard from them that Starshield, Starlink, that commercial satellite LEO capability is something they needed. We heard that, and we worked with the command and our CIO at CD&I to figure out a way to allow the Marines not to use their mission funds to buy those terminals, to set up an effort within SISCOM to procure and deliver that capability as expeditiously.
It's a great success story on how we're taking the feedback from Marines. Like, we are listening.
It is.
I know sometimes they feel like we may not be, but the program offices are 100% listening to their feedback.
We are, and we're really excited for that effort. This really was a good lesson in how to procure commercial off-the-shelf capability. We identified a contract vehicle. We're able to procure the terminals. We've got them. We're using our partners down at NIWC,
okay,
land with the Navy down in Charleston. They're doing a kitting effort for us to kind of Marine Corps-ize the terminals into a transit case to get our IUID tags, to get all of the things that we need to do to track the material from a logistics perspective that Marine Corps Systems Command and the Marine Corps has to do. So we're excited. We've got the terminals, and we're preparing now to do fielding conferences in the first quarter of 25 and get those terminals out to the units.
Lots of exciting things happening in your program going in the next few years. We've talked about a lot of the systems within your program and, you know, how they're coming out in the next few years. And the big talk lately, well, probably for the last 5 to 6 years, has been force modernization, force design. How would you say your systems are supporting the future fight?
Sure. So the key factor of the all of these systems includes providing high throughput digital communications to maintain a common operational picture for the force and to link sensors to shooters within the battle space. The demand for near real-time information is critical to our warfighter success. Our goal is to ensure they have ready access to that information. So our entire portfolio is focused on that. We want to ensure the fleet has options in meeting their command and control communications needs in various environments. This is why one of our other emerging efforts is so important. The Eagle program, which hopefully you'll start hearing more and more about, is a first in its class free spaced optics capability, which operates outside of the radio frequency spectrum. Oh. So this is something that the Marine Corps does not have yet.
Okay.
We are working with the Naval Research Lab on an R&D effort to get this capability. There are free space optic capabilities out in the commercial world, and we're trying to get something that can be used for comms within the Marine Corps. It provides yet another means for communication that may be available when other radio frequency comms are targeted.
Okay.
So if you've got a line of sight radio system or troposcatter system, or you're in a SATCOM denied environment, this is just another form of communication that the fleet can leverage.
Yeah, because communication while in the field or in the fight is critical. And, you know, I feel like we talk about the lethal systems a lot, but we sometimes forget to touch on data and communication as it applies to force design.
Yes, yes. Without that ability to conduct disaggregated command and control comms and operations, then all of those other systems may not work.
So what's next for high-capacity comms?
So as you kind of heard, it's a very exciting time on the high-capacity comms team. We are actively fielding two programs, we're prepping to field another program, and we're in development and testing of three other programs. With that, we are also looking at the best solutions to maintain or improve readiness for the systems we have in sustainment to ensure we are meeting the fleet's needs, while we're also planning for disposal of some of our legacy systems. So there's a lot going on in the program office right now in all stages of the acquisition lifecycle, which is really, really exciting. We're also always looking at what's next on the horizon, what's available in the science and technology arena for tactical comms. And we're potentially planning in FY25 an industry day to see what emerging capabilities industry can offer that we may not be currently tracking. We know the battle space and the fight and the technology are constantly changing, and we need to ensure we're keeping pace.
Sounds like every day is an adventure.
It is. Yes. It's a fun adventure.
Yes. So we talked a bit about your program, what's next, but let's shift it a little bit and talk a bit about you. How did you end up at SysCom? Can you give us a background of your career?
Sure. I actually started my career as an IT specialist working for the Army as part of their Army Knowledge Leaders program. I joined that program when I got out of college, did that for a few years, and then following the intern program, I briefly worked as a contractor supporting an ACAT-1 business system with the Army called the General Fund Enterprise Business System. That was essentially my start of my formal acquisition experience.
Okay.
The Army ended up insourcing me as a civilian IT specialist after a few years. In that role, I was performing duties more closely aligned to the program management arena. So my position was reclassified as a program analyst. From there, I moved up to the Army's Program Executive Office for Enterprise Information Systems, where I worked as an acquisition management specialist for various enterprise IT systems. Essentially, I was a liaison between the program offices and the Department of Army's Acquisition, Logistics, and Technology Group, kind of helping programs navigate through the defense acquisition system, how to get to their milestone decisions and things like that. And then in 2015, I decided it was time to seek other acquisition opportunities. And that's when I was lucky enough to land my first role with Marine Corps Systems Command. I was hired as a program analyst with PM, Global Combat Support System, Marine Corps, just downstairs from here. And in that role, I was charged with leading the warehouse management system project That was a great learning experience as my first role as a project officer. Then in 2018, I had a mentor, our APM for program management at the time. She was somewhat of my mentor, and she helped prepare me for promotion to a product manager. So at that time in 2018, I became the product manager for the manpower and recruiting group within PM Applications.
Okay.
Yes. And then after a reorg and a realignment, which seems common around here, we were reorged and realigned under the Navy's PEO for Manpower, Logistics, and Business Solutions. And my team became the product manager for procurements, recruiting, and training. So you're likely seeing a trend here that my career primarily focused on IT and business systems.
Yes.
And which is fitting because my degree is in computer information systems with a master's in business administration. So IT is what I knew. But when I saw the vacancy announcement for the PDM for High Capacity Comms, formerly SATCOM, back in 2023, I knew I had to apply. It was time to expand my acquisition experience. So it has been a thoroughly enjoyable challenge seeing and working the acquisition process from the more tactical and tangible hardware perspective.
So are you from the DMV area?
I'm not. I am from Massachusetts.
Okay.
But I've been living in the DMV area now for just about the same amount of time I did live in Massachusetts. So I've been here since 2002.
Okay, so you're practically a local.
I'm practically a local at this point, yes.
Where can we find you when you're not here?
Oh, when I'm not here, let's see. Well, I have two children, 12-year-old boy and a 15-year-old girl that keep me quite busy. They both play competitive soccer. So if I'm not at work, this is actually funny because I talked to my mother, and when I talk to her, she says, "You're either at work or headed to work, or you're at a soccer field," which is true and a little bit sad, but I wouldn't have it any other way. And then the other place you'll find me is in our winery. My husband and I actually own a winery called Nokesville Winery. So when I'm not doing this job or transporting my kids somewhere, I'm doing that job.
That is so interesting. How did you get into that?
We really enjoyed wine.
Yeah.
Fair. Yes. But my husband is... he's a firefighter, but he's highly motivated, and he's also the type that's looking for a challenge. So we bought some property back in when we moved to our current home in 2014, and we decided to plant some grapes and see what would happen. And then COVID hit, and we were home and had more free time, and so we decided to try making wine. And my husband ended up getting an internship with another local winery in Virginia, and really enjoyed it. And we decided that people actually liked the wine we were making, and we decided to start selling it. And then it's grown since then. So we started selling commercially back in 2020. And since then, we now have a small tasting room that's open to the public. And
I love that. It kind of reminds me of this holiday movie on Netflix about a winery.
Oh, I've probably seen that one.
It's one of my favorites to watch around.
Was it, did it take place in upstate New York? I think there might have been a few different ones, but I know I've seen a couple.
This one I think was in California.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll find it and I'll share that.
Okay. Yes, please do.
Now that we've talked about what your team is working on, and you, let's do what everybody loves, the lightning round.
Okay.
So I didn't share these with you. So when I ask, just say the first thing that pops in your head.
Okay.
Okay. You ready?
I think so.
Okay. Chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
If you could travel anywhere, where would you go?
Italy.
Favorite season?
Summer.
Favorite TV show, book, movie, or podcast?
So let's see. Podcast, it's really sad, but I'm into Disney planning podcasts. So there's one called WDW Prep to Go that I listen to their trip reports on a regular basis, even when I have no plans to go to Disney. And then movie, probably P.S. I Love You. I'm a bit of a sucker for a rom-com. And then book, I recently read The Women by Kristen Hanna, which has become one of my favorite books. It was a really interesting story about women supporting the Vietnam War.
That's on my To Be Read list.
It was, well, I listened to it on podcast, okay. Which is, since I'm in my car so often, that's usually where most of my reading comes in. But it was good. I recommend it.
Well, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me. This has been fun.
It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Equipping the Core. Don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcasting platform or on social media. We'd love to hear from you.